Case 52 from the Book of Serenity. Cao Shan's reality body. Cao Shan asked Elder Day, "The Buddha's true reality body is like space. It manifests form in response to beings, like the moon in the water. How do you explain the principle of response?" Day said, "Like an ass looking in a well." Cao Shan said, "You said a lot indeed, but you only said 80%. Day said, "What about you, teacher?" Cao Shan said, "Like the well looking at the ass." So thank you for joining in with me, calling out to Kwanze Mbosal. This has been part of our practice here on Ango. This ancient practice of Kano Doko, this call and response, sometimes called the communion of call and response. And so many ways to do it. I was so touched in our Dharma dialogue by Ed's comment. Of course, in our Dharma dialogue, so rich to hear from everyone. When we speak from our experience, it is the taisho of our life, not the taisho of what we have read or what we think we know. But Ed was pointing us to call and response, and that our practice itself is our call. Our life itself is our calling out, our appeal. And so this Kano Doko, this response that this case centers around, this principle of response, it is also sometimes called a wholeheartedness. So when we give ourselves wholeheartedly to the moment, the teaching is that the moment, and the moment we might call the reality body, the Dharmakaya, the moment gives itself to us. This is what Dogen sings of over and over and over. Dogen finding 1,014 ways to say the same thing. That from the traditional, from the relative mind, we think there is practice and there is enlightenment. But Dogen reminds us so beautifully and cryptically that practice is enlightenment. That these two things do not arise sequentially. And so this practice of calling out, so in our Zazen, We sit upright and we do our best to remember what we love. The forgetting is the way of human life, right? We forget. The great The great spiritual problem, I think, is that we forget who we are and we forget why we're here. So we are carried away. The original Pali word for mindfulness has its roots in the idea of remembering. So we're trying to remember what we love and move toward it as best we can. And this is something that we cannot do from central headquarters. So wonderfully this morning and other times we keep talking about the impossibility of strategizing. You can't plan your way into this world of brightness. But this world of brightness is what gives itself to us. This world of brightness is the world that holds us, a world that is unfabricated and unimaginable, inconceivable. In Buddhism, we call it the Dharmakaya, the reality body that has no form. It is not about elaboration. It is the full possibility, the fullness, the source world. Dogen called it the Myoho, the wondrous Dharma, wondrous and mysterious and inconceivable. Our minds are contained within this wondrous Dharma. This Dharmakaya is the field from which everything arises and everything passes away. You, me, Paul Chapman, our parents, our children, our grandparents, each flower, each mountain, each universe, coming and going, and each thing utterly supported by everything else. I love the comment too. Many kalpas ago, I believe it was Sandra who was commenting on the adage that we are born alone and die alone. Just looking at the birth side of it, quite a silly thing to imagine that we are born alone. We would not, we could not survive. We all come out of our mothers, and someone was there for you. When you did not know any better, when I was helpless and defenseless, we were each one of us cared for. Now, we may have some complaints about how we were cared for, maybe not quite like we would have liked to be, and indeed all of us with grievous wounds, all of us hurt by our caregivers who were doing their best, given their circumstances and their life situation, each one of them doing their best, just as those of us who have children or know of children, each of us, we do our best. In some way, of course, our best is never enough. The pain of all of us as parents, as friends, as partners, is that we do not live up to who we would want to be. So on this path of Buddhism, we have the practice of a vow and repentance, our gatha of atonement. We recite three times every day the beginning of our sutra service. This place of recognizing how we fall short, recognizing where we have been trapped, and where our thoughts, our words, our actions have hurt people that we love dearly, and how we too have been hurt by others. So we might say this repentance gatha is also the forgiveness gatha, where we consider the possibility of forgiving ourselves. Maybe more strongly, we practice the intention of forgiving ourselves, our miserable, inadequate selves. And in this repentance, in this acknowledging where we have been blind, there is some new possibility that we take up our vow once again, these impossible bodhisattva vows. And we vow once again to wake up. Vow once again to remember. And this movement toward awakening, I think it's so important to know how powerfully we are all called to awaken, and what a natural thing it is to wake up. We talk so much about the difficulty of karmic circumstances and the forgetting and how much we are carried along. But yet, in the middle of being lost in a dream, we very naturally come to awareness. This process of waking up is not some unnatural thing that we have to force or can force by an act of will, but rather aligning with this natural quality, this gift of awareness, this gift of presence. In the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha says that we have all been given an enormous blessing and have received an enormous trust. The blessing each one of us has been given, a blessing beyond measure, is our life itself. Such a rare and precious thing. And of course, the 10,000 joys and sorrows, and the terrible things, the terrible sorrow, the terrible confusion, the terrible dullness. This is part of it. But yet we are told that it is a rare thing to be born a human. And even more rare to have heard the Dharma, to have encountered the Dharma. Each one of us heard something, read something, thought something that has brought us here. And I personally think, as Melissa and others have said too, I am so grateful for your presence here. The support of Sangha, what we are able to create together, is so precious, this jewel, this treasure of Sangha. Reb Anderson talks about four aspects of this call and response, this communion of call and response, and taking, looking at some ancient sutras, he says that actually as human beings we are always calling out, but we're not always conscious of it. And the world is always responding. The Buddha fields, the Bodhisattva of compassion, always responding, but sometimes we don't realize it. So the four positions are, the first one is when we are unconscious of our calling out. We're just going along and imagining we're doing it by ourselves. And that we are unconscious of the response, just normal life, just trying to get by. Second position, he says, is when we are unconscious of calling out, but we are conscious of the response. So this is going along in the middle of our normal life, and suddenly we wake up. Suddenly, a joy fills our heart. A friend smiles at us. We allow the music to penetrate our heart. We see the snow falling down on the soft twilight. So we're not conscious of calling out, but we see where we are interrupted by the beauty of the world, and we feel and know the response without knowing the call. That's the second position. The third is when we are conscious of calling out in the middle of difficulty, in the middle of our life, calling out, and we are not conscious of the response. So we call out, and the response comes, but not in the way we would like it to. Where Melissa and I first began to practice on retreats, there was often a special little room devoted to Kanon. And so there was a figure of Kanon, and you could go and sit in there. And I remember many afternoons sitting, having conversations with Kanon about how my knees were hurting and how lost I was. And pretty much invariably, I was met with silence, like the seeker calling out from the poem Steve read us. I was certainly aware of calling out and wanting to be saved, wanting to somehow to be rescued from my life. And I was not conscious of any response. And then the fourth position is when we are conscious of calling out and when we are conscious of the response. This is our practice in Om Nam chanting, where we consciously call out and where we consciously receive what arises as the response. So these four different possibilities within this life that, of course, each one of us is being minutely supported by the whole cosmos. We could not exist without this precious air that just happens to be the right composition of oxygen and nitrogen. 20% more oxygen and we would burn up. 20% less, we would fall down. By the blood and the cells and the brilliance of our the pancreas that fortunately, unlike the frog, hopefully most of us have the pancreas or have something that does whatever the pancreas is supposed to do, which most of us are blissfully ignorant of. But this support that is our life. So our life is calling out, and this calling out, and this principle of response. So how would you explain it? The Buddha's true reality body is like space. It manifests form in response to beings. This is the teaching of dependent co-arising, that the self and the world create each other. We reach out to touch and we are touched. You reach out to a tree and are you touching the tree or is the tree touching you? Kate's notion of shikantaza as expanding the place of contact. Or was it Julie? All the voices we hear begin to be the same voice, each one distinct, but these this exploration of our life and the possibility of being met in this moment. And as we close the gap, as we become intimate, with walking as walking, with breathing as breathing, this is our zazen is our call, and our zazen, our life is no other than the response to this call. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably and we'll have our Dharma dialogue.
This is a time for questions or observations about practice, could be about the talk, or about anything else that's coming up for you.
Paul's passing, and you're talking about our vow to practice the intention of self-forgiveness. Mm-hmm. So touching and so immediate, but yeah. And it seemed to me that this practice is not something I can do just by myself. That I need the support. I need to call out in order to really practice that. It can't. It can't come from me alone.
Well, and part of the teaching of this response is that that it requires us calling out. So this teaching that the universe is freely giving itself, but until we call out, we can't receive it. Yeah, so, really getting that we can't do it ourselves, so important. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And another part of this that suggests itself to me is that thinking that we're alone is a huge delusion, although a very common one. You know, the reason that when we call out, we receive is because we're nested in this vast fabric of interbeing. And you know, some of the research and understanding into suicide has to do with people who really deny that deeply. They've lost it, they've forgotten it. They just feel so alone and deeply, deeply cut off. And don't realize that they're killing themselves will have an impact because they become sort of autistic or solipsistic. They can't imagine anything outside of themselves.
And this interconnectedness, when Dave was talking about, you know, that the quality of the oxygen, the air we breathe, being just right, and the sunlight, and... you know, it just speaks of the fragility of it all, so delicate, so fragile, and then when someone goes like this, it's like one little way, one way or the other, it could have gone,
I have to take issue with one, I think, standard observation that I can accept that it's rare that we be born human, and yet, of course, here we are. But what I have difficulty with is the idea that encountering the Dharma is a rare thing. And I say that, I know that there are two ways of seeing Dharma. There's, you know, Dharma with a small d, you know, atoms and, you know, wind pressure and that sort of thing. But it seems to me that everything calls out to us. That I remember going back to Sun Exit House many, many years ago. Melissa gave a talk, and I swear I've looked for the text you used, and I think I've found it in bits and pieces, but I think what happened was that you told the story in a way that was much more alive than anything I've read about walls and tiles preaching the Dharma constantly. And it's not Dharma with a small d, it's Dharma with a big D. And I think each one of us, whether we've been exposed to the texts, whether we've come to a Zendo, whether we've met a teacher, we all wind up encountering that. We don't understand it, perhaps. We don't know what it is when we reach out and touch a tree and feel that the tree is touching back. But I think we all get that. I think that's something accessible to each one of us who is lucky enough to be born human. And perhaps dogs and cats.
And you know, the thing is, you know it. So your chance of being born human, 100%, and your chance of encountering the Dharma, 100%, already happened. And you're right, it's all universal. But, you know, think about the first and second positions of Reb Anderson. So many of us don't know that it's right in front of us. I think that's more common.
Right, and yet it is...
Oh, it's right there. Yeah, it's right here.
Right there.
Right here.
And is supporting each one of us, whatever opinion we have about it. We are only exist in this interconnected total support. Right, so in that sense, there is nothing but encountering the Dharma. Yeah.
And.
And.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that's
well said. I've always found that comforting. The idea that we could all die, the books here could all burn, Buddhism, Zen could be wiped from the face of the earth, and someday somebody would sit down and go, you know, life shits. And they'd figure it out because it's
right. Universal principles. Yeah.
And I think that's so important that what we're studying here ultimately is not Zen, but it is life. And that human beings have studied this life in many different forms and languages that are not, it's not like everything derives from Zen, but Zen comes from some source that is utterly human, utterly unavoidable. So poets, artists, everybody, this source is freely open.
So that's it's the unavoidableness. Mm-hmm. That is just so touching and wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Great, thank you.
Katie?
Yeah, it's funny. I agree about the unavoidableness, but I was thinking that I think that's part of what makes these teachings, I think, difficult to grasp. Especially with the Western mind, is like that the totality of it is, it's kind of awe-inspiring. And I think what's so scary about the fourth position of recognizing both call and response is that, you know, everything's the call and everything's a response at the same time type of thing, like that maybe there is no caller and there is no responder, right? It's all one. And and to give that up, I think that's what so many people hold on to, because we've all been in dark places where we're calling, and we feel like no one's listening. And there's almost something safe about that, like, but I'm the one calling. You know, this is my hurt. This is my grief. And you don't understand that. You don't understand me. There's something so easy about that. And the letting go of the caller, I think, it's unavoidable, and yet So much of me wants to avoid it because it's scary. So it's just another perspective on that idea.
Yeah. Well, and the person who gave the Dharma talk last night was talking about that very thing. And one of the things she suggested, that the idea of that losing ourselves is scarier than the actual experience.
Yeah.
Right? So we hold on really tightly. Oh, God, I can't. But when we actually participate, when we loosen just a little bit, it can be like, oh.
Yeah.
Right? But I so appreciate you saying the attachment and the ease of that place. And it's we were saying before, it's a very solid place for the ego.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything sucks, but I know who I am.
Yeah, but it's my suck, yeah.
That's right.
It's my suck.
Yeah,
belongs to me.
Yeah.
And it's familiar, you know, that's part of it. We cling to it because we don't know what's outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you.
We'll sit for another couple of moments in our Zazen posture. And...